You are listening to History Man, the platform for historians, authors, and museum directors to tell their stories of the American Revolution. Here we have the second part of the two-part series on Francis Marion. Come walk in the footsteps of heroes and proclaim freedom reigns.
So here's a great 1850s painting by William Ranney, showing what he thought Marion's group may have looked like crossing the Black Mingo Creek. Marion's intelligence later, at the end of September, said that there's a group of loyalists making a hardened camp at a place called Black Mingo Creek. Black Mingo Creek is a tidal creek, which is, means that you can go to Georgetown or and back on the tide for free without paddling. That road that goes through Black Mingo Creek, where that red circle is cleverly named County Line Road. So that's the county line between Georgetown County and Williamsburg County. So inside that circle is where a tavern was called Dollar's Tavern, which is where a guy named Captain John Cumming Ball had his men stationed. And see, to get across that creek, Black Mingo Creek, is not a little teeny creek. You gotta have a ferry to get across it or a bridge. There's a bridge at a place a mile upstream from there called Welltown, and then there's a ferry there called Shepherd's Ferry. And if you're trying to control country, then what you want to do is control those points, those choke points, like bridges, ferries, and stuff like that. So Marion's men ride all night. They come from North Carolina. They cross the Welltown Bridge. They put blankets down on the bridge to try to muffle the sound of the hooves of their horses, but it didn't work. You know, when it's really, really super quiet and somebody's, you know, got 100 horsemen riding over a wooden bridge a mile away, you're gonna hear it. The bridge is gonna creak and all that kind of stuff. So the guard at Shepherd's Ferry fired his gun. So the British were not snuck up on. They came out of Dollard's Tavern, out of their tents, and they lined up in a line like you did in the 18th century to fight. Marion divided his troops into three columns, and they attacked in the middle, and they attacked on the left flank and the right flank. The fighting went back and forth. This wasn't a one and done just like that. Marion's men did not have bayonets. The British did have bayonets. But Marion's men were tough farmers, and they were outnumbered the British, and they didn't run away. They kept fighting till the British ran into the swamp. The great prize of this battle, besides teaching loyalists to go man guard post for the British, could be bad for your life, was that Cumming Ball was a son of a very wealthy family. And Cumming Ball had what they call a blooded thoroughbred horse from Virginia. And so Marion, who never took any war prizes at all except this one time, took John Cumming Ball's horse. He renamed the horse Old Ball. And Francis Marion rode Old Ball throughout the rest of the war. And Old Ball was a really spectacular horse every day, and that was Marion's war prize from the Black Mingo. So Francis Marion's signature, he has a very distinct signature. If you ever see it once, he, you know, winds it all up there at the end. And I've seen probably 5 or 6 dozen Marion letters, and he does that every time. So he's very distinct signature. But anyway, he got word that there were two more groups of loyalists, one near Salem Black River Church, which is in Sumter County, and the other one was near I-95 out in the middle of nowhere in Clarendon County at a place called Tearcoat or Tarcoat Swamp. Marion sets out to go at night, go up on the camp of the British who were there under Loyalist Lieutenant Colonel Samuel Tynes, and attack the camp. Once again, he divides into three groups. They rush into the camp. It's a total surprise. They catch British loyalist militiamen doing what militiamen would do in camp at night, playing cards, drinking corn whiskey, and things like that. And it was a one-sided fight, if there ever was one. Some people got away because they just disappeared into the swamp, but all their horses, all their horse furniture, all their equipment, everything that they had, guns, weapons, powder, lead, everything of value, got captured by Marion. So once again, Marion sneaks up on a group of loyalists who are isolated at night. There's no British unit to come riding to the rescue. And it scares the bejesus out of the, can I say bejesus? The bejesus out of the British. And so the loyalist recruiting plummets. Marion then finds out a few days later that the loyalists that are manning Georgetown, South Carolina, heard about Marion's bold raid and all took off. Now, Marion had two or three sisters living in Georgetown at the time. He wanted the British to know that they could not hold Georgetown, so he took his band of men, rode right into Georgetown, rode around, paraded around, probably spoke to his sisters, and then went back out into the woods before the British could do anything about it. Marion again withdraws to North Carolina, to where he has some friends and can get supplies and food and stuff like that. So there's where Tearcoat Swamp is. The main line going north and south is I-95, and not much to see there now, but as Joe said, that I'm in the parking lot business, and we hope to make all of these sites visitable so that you can drive there, you can get off the road, you can safely park, and there are interpretive signages so these stories can be properly told. So that's another John Blake White, a local guy who painted the sweet potato legend. Did that happen? I wouldn't be surprised, because they did capture British officers during this time, and they would have been in uniform, and Marion would have certainly shared his sweet potato dinner. Now, I told you that we were interested in the legends, and you know, this painting is legendary. However, I was able to find two different independent records of this event happening. As most old records are, one said it was supper and the other one said it's breakfast. So I don't know which it was, but I believe that it happened from these two not contemporaneous, sources that were written down by old soldiers many years after the fight. So we come up on November. Cornwallis is livid. He wants Francis Marion by name, so he calls for his hammer, Bannister Tarleton, to go get Marion. So Tarleton goes to Richardson's plantation, which is on the east side of the Santee River, near Rimini, South Carolina, a nice Italian town. And Tarleton sets a building on fire so that it's visible in the night sky. And so he thinks that Marion's men will see the fire and assume that the widow Richardson's house was being burned. It was a trap. The widow Richardson bravely gets someone to go and find Marion and tell him it's a trap. And so Marion, knowing the widow Richardson, her husband was Richard Richardson, one of the earliest generals of the South Carolina and the American Revolution. Richard Richardson has passed away of natural causes at this time. And he takes off. So there's kind of a chase scene, if you will. It goes, Marion's camp was on a place called Jack's Creek. Then they went by Richburg's Mill, then we know about where that was. Then they crossed Ox Swamp, which goes around the south and east side of Manning, South Carolina. Marion then goes about 12 miles further east to a place called Benbow's Ferry over the Black River. And it's one of those choke points that you have to go on the causeway to get across. The river is a braided swamp at that point and about a mile wide. And there's no other way to get through there. Marion waits.
Dalton doesn't show up. Marion waits. Dalton doesn't show up. Marion knows that Tarleton is not afraid of him. So, he probably doesn't find this out for many, many years. What happens is that Thomas Sumter is taking the field again and is threatening the British base at 96. Cornwallis has to recall his hammer from chasing Marion to set him to chasing Thomas Sumter. So the messenger gets to Tarleton about where Manning is today, and Tarleton does, you know, what a good officer does when he gets a direct order from his boss, turns around, leaves Marion, and goes back to meet in Winnsboro with Lord Cornwallis to find out what his next mission is. Of course, that leaves now Marion alone, and Marion has now evaded capture or death by Cornwallis's best man. So what does that do for your reputation? It's good. So the British by this time are having so much trouble getting messages, supplies, and men from Charleston to Camden to go to the other sites where Cornwallis is that they have to take troops, seasoned troops, to escort new troops to get them by Marion. And they can hardly get a letter back. They have to send a whole troop of cavalry just to get a letter from Camden or Winnsboro to Charleston. So a group of the 7th Regiment, who will meet most of their ends at Cowpens, are being escorted by men of the 64th, old veterans, at a place called Halfway Swamp. If you've ever seen Elliott's Mill Pond there, it's stunningly beautiful. It's on the east side or the north side of the Santee River. This is the action that we really can't figure out. It's all bedded in the legend so deep is that you just read all the legends and you don't really know what really happened. You know the legend is not right, it's a legend, but you don't really know what happens. There's about a 20-mile chase from Halfway Swamp to Singleton's Mill, which is in the Poinsett State Park. And it appears that they had a flag out, which was a symbol, a signal, that smallpox was in the house. Well, nobody wanted smallpox. That was death sentence. And so they just left Singleton's alone. The Americans went back to the south with Marion. The British and the Loyalists went north to Camden. And so that's what happened there. The best we know. So Francis Marion, by January, has put together what we call Marion's Brigade. Now, Governor Rutledge wasn't even in South Carolina most of this time, and he was in command of everything because there was no other government besides Governor Rutledge. And when Governor Rutledge figured out that Francis Marion had built a brigade out of nothing, he said, this guy needs to be a brigadier general. So on January the 1st of 1781, Francis Marion was promoted from Continental Lieutenant Colonel Commandant to Brigadier General of South Carolina Militia. So Sumter had been promoted in October, so Sumter was the senior brigadier, but Marion was the second one of this part of the war. So Marion won in the fall of 1780, 5 sneak attack, low-cost victories. He evaded Tarleton. He did a bowl raid on Georgetown. We don't know what he did at Halfway Swamp. Can't figure that out. But he went from being a martinet, continental, high-discipline officer to working with farmers who came and went as they wanted, who weren't getting paid, didn't have ammunition, didn't have weapons, didn't have discipline and training, didn't have bayonets, to becoming what we now call the Swamp Fox. And those series events in the fall of 1780 converted Marion from this Continental officer to this legendary guerrilla commander. Now, Marion did not invent guerrilla warfare. A lot of people think he did, but he didn't. But he mastered it. Now, what happens next? The gentleman on the left of the screen is a guy named Parson Weems, Mason Lott Weems. And Mason Lott Weems was an itinerant novelist and writer and bookseller and preacher. And he wrote the first biography of Francis Marion. Of George Washington. And so the stuff like he chopped down the cherry tree and threw the silver dollar across the Rappahannock River and all that stuff is what Weems made up. And Weems got pretty wealthy selling the first biography of George Washington. And Weems was very aware that this new nation needed heroes, that it was essential for the character of the nation to have these heroes. And so once the George Washington book kind of petered out a little bit and he got competition, he met Peter Orey, who had kept a journal as being Marion's right-hand man. So Weems talked Orey out of the journal and started taking the journal and putting dialogue and fancy words and words in everybody's mouth and making up facts where there weren't any facts, and wrote the first biography of Francis Marion. It was a bestseller. So beside Longfellow doing Paul Revere, Mason Lott Weems made Francis Marion a household name in the new United States. Marion may have been forgotten except for the next fella. And Joe stole my thunder a little bit. His name is Walter Elias Disney. Walt Disney liked big American characters. He did a three-part series on Daniel Boone that was super successful. After doing that, he looked around for someone else he could do and read the Weems Orey biography of Marion and said, "This is my guy." Now, you can go on YouTube and watch the episodes, and they're all dressed like Robin Hood's men. It's on the same soundstage in Hollywood that film Robin Hood. The script is terrible, has nothing to do with Francis Marion. But it made him into a legendary character. And thankfully he did, because the real Francis Marion is legendary. So, some tales there of some airplanes. F-16s that belonged to the Swamp Fox Squadron of the South Carolina Airmen Natural Guard. We have a university named Francis Marion University in Florence. Lots of books about Francis Marion. And so his legend still lives on in the hearts of the people of the United States. Now, if you're interested, if you get deeply interested in Francis Marion, we have a conference every year about Marion and other revolutionary characters. And that's when it will be in the fall of 2022. And so any of you would be welcome to come to the conference about Marion. Now, lots of work is going on now to save Marion sites, to interpret Marion sites, to make them visitable, and to do research. And so those are some websites that have more research if you're interested. I'll be glad to answer any questions that I can. I certainly don't know everything about Marion. I have been fortunate enough to work in the Francis Marion papers for a number of years, and that has kind of helped me out. Yes, sir.
Could you say a couple of words?
Well, I hope there's nobody from Charleston here. But I'm going to say it anyway. When they were having the victory celebration in December of 1782, when the British sailed out, they invited all the Continental soldiers and all the officers back. They specifically, the Charlestonians, did not invite Francis Marion and his men, who had been on duty helping fight for Charleston. Nathaniel Greene got word of this, and Nathaniel Greene sent a message to Marion, and it said, "Please come as my special guest." Marion said, nah, I've got a farm that's a disaster. I'm going to go home to my farm, which is what he did, until he was elected to the South Carolina General Assembly. He was a very moderate person in the General Assembly. He did not want to punish the Tories. He wanted to build the state and the nation back. He died on his farm. He did get his plantation going again because he wanted to be a farmer. He was tired of fighting. Yes, sir.
If I remember correctly, it was a while ago, I can remember scenes in the Disney show back in 1960 of Francis Marion's men hiding behind trees and little walls and rocks and picking off British soldiers as they walked by down the road. Was there any truth to it? Did he ever really, his forces ever really engage the British top forces or do any of that kind of thing?
You know, the average military historian you meet say Francis Marion is the master of ambush. None of the military actions we covered tonight are ambushes. The classic Marion ambush was at a place called Parker's Ferry, which is north of Jacksonboro in Colleton County. And his men really did line up beside a road. The British really did come by, the Loyalists did. And Francis Marion had a kind of a turkey shoot killing him. And that's the only big ambush that I know of that Marion pulled off. Yes, sir, way in the back. What Marion was doing was typical of military discipline of the 18th century. If you think about how Navy men lived and how many times they were flogged, this was normal in those kinds of military services. If we judge it by 21st century standards, it's terrible. If we judge it by standards of the day, it's typical. It was a very brutal world.
Just one point of local interest is that Parson Weems, who wrote about Washington in the, died here in Beaufort on Bay Street. He was down here sold books.
He was at Paris Island and Marine Corps Basic.
Right.
Yeah. I do want to tell you that Beaufort is really the only specific place mentioned in the Declaration of Independence. It's not mentioned by name, but one of the grievances that the Americans penned against King George was relocating the General Assembly to far places that are hard to get to, that don't have the accommodations. And what Jefferson was talking about was when the governor, the royal governor, moved the General Assembly because they did something he didn't like from Charleston to Beaufort, South Carolina. So y'all are in the Declaration.